meeting of the Yolo County Transportation District Board of Directors. And we'll begin our meeting now at 7 p.m. with a determination of quorum. One modification, a couple modifications to the agenda this evening. I'm going to move the consideration of approval of the agenda to consent, unless someone has a concern about that. And then prior to the consent calendar, we'll allow public comment on items not on there, not on the agenda, or items on consent. And then later in the meeting, we'll also have an opportunity for the public to comment on items that will be taken action on individually. So is it Mimi, are you the person who will determine quorum with the roll call?
Okay. City of Davis?
I am here.
City of West Sacramento?
Here.
City of Woodland?
Here.
City of Winters?
She's just here. She's here.
Here.
Oh, here. Okay. And Yolo County?
Here. Very good. So we're all here, and we have we're going to move the consideration of the agenda to consent. That's item two. And before we take up consent calendar and that topic, there's an opportunity for public comment on items not on the agenda or items on the consent agenda. Is there anyone who would like to speak to this board on those topics?
We don't have any public comments.
Okay, no hands are raised. We did receive one emailed comment. It's on another one of the topics on the agenda, so we'll ask you to read that when we get to that topic. Are there any, that's from Mr. Barnbaum. Are there any other topics that have been raised in communications?
Mr. Chair, move approval of the consent calendar. This is Stoutman.
Okay, so I guess there were no other public comments, so we'll accept that motion. Is there a second?
Lauren will second.
Okay, Lauren has seconded it. So we have a motion by Stallard, second by Lauren to approve the consent calendar and the agenda as presented. Please call the roll.
City of Davis?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Woodland?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
And Yolo County?
Aye. And I would just note that the fact that these items were on the consent agenda, item 3, A through K, does in no way minimize their significance. This is a significant body of work on establishing administrative procedures, pursuing two TRCIP grant applications, and managing some of the hiring practices and necessities of the district. So, Autumn, congratulations on really a business-like and foresightful set of topics here for us today.
And thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, and that brings us to item 4, which we've just dealt with on items. This is our public comment. We just did that, so that brings us to item 5. Board member reports, announcements, nominations, and presentations. And we do have a board ad hoc subcommittee working on the 80 managed lane planning effort. Director Ledesma, are you ready to share some early thoughts with us? And I know Autumn and Matt also can chime in as well.
Yeah, just sure. And forgive me in advance. Right before this call, like I got a sudden sneezing attack. So hopefully if I drop off. Friday, January 20th was a meeting with the subcommittee, as well as with the Yolo 80 project team from Caltrans. And let me tell you who was in attendance at that meeting. It was the chair, Mr. Saylor, myself, Matt Dulcich, representing YCTD, Autumn, representing staff, and then from Caltrans was, I'm going to get the names as best I can, Amarjeet, Supinder Takara, Greg Wong, Sutha, I'm not going to get that name, and Nawid Nassar, and then from SACOG was James Corliss and Christina Smits. We really just had an update from the project, kind of where they are, status report, We're looking for dates, which they don't have a firm date on when the EIR would be released, but they're looking at no later than the end of 2022. But they have a lot of work to go. They did a really good job of updating us as best they could on what the project steps would be like. They also outlined they have a contract with UC Berkeley to look at DMT mitigation options. And again, that also won't be completed to the end of 2022. And the group had a really good, robust conversation about how to go about looking at options for DMT mitigation. So we'll continue to delve into that as the group, project group, the steering group continues to meet. I think the chair and I and Matt, excuse me, really tried to extend all of your views, the views that we've all shown from our meetings prior, about, trying to mitigate, have a strategy for BMT mitigation, determined soon. And not at the end of the environmental process, but again, we are just trying to give them our feedback. Hopefully, they will begin to assess where we are going next with the EIR. But they did pay attention to all the remarks from this board, so I think, Mr. Chair, I think you'll agree that they heard us loud and clear about our priorities in this project. And we also went over in detail the goals that we outlined from our meeting on December 14th. And again, they really just wanted to express their appreciation for the thoughtfulness and get clarification on a few things that are to come. So again, I think it was a really good meeting. I think we had a debrief meeting about it, and really got a lot from our meetings with them. But I think there's a lot of good next steps coming. I'm not sure Autumn or Dawn or if Matt joined. I don't see him on the call. But if you have anything to add, just in general for the board.
I'll just note that Matt texted me. He's having internet troubles at home, so I think he's in transit to his office to join the call. So he'll be here soon. And I'll just add, in terms of updates, since the meeting that we had with Caltrans, one of the kind of action items out of that was for Greg Wong and myself to start meeting regularly to talk through kind of how we move forward with some of the kind of feedback that the board had provided to Caltrans. And so we have started meeting weekly. Those meetings have been very productive. Jose has participated, as well as Naweed Nassar, in several of those meetings. And I'd say we're making good progress. Caltrans has, you know, communicated with us that they're working to revise the project description and list of alternatives for the environmental review based on some of our feedback. And in addition, we are working very closely with them on our TRCIP application, and I'll talk more about that in the executive director's report, but that application is going in March 3rd. And I think we have a very strong set of investments that we're looking for funding from TRCIP, and it's been a great process working with Caltrans to really figure out how do we really prioritize transit and make sure we're emphasizing the transit components of this project as part of that application.
I think one of the things that I'd say is that the working partnership between this agency and Caltrans is strengthening by the day as we continue these conversations. And I'm glad that that's happening. That's working nicely. Thanks to Autumn's persistence and the efforts there. I think you set some standard meeting times for this effort.
Correct. Yeah, we do now have monthly meetings of the ad hoc committee, and then monthly meetings of the ad hoc committee with Caltrans and SACOG going forward. And so those meetings should hopefully be in everyone's calendar. I don't have the dates in front of me, but they're coming up.
All right. Are there any questions? Matt, Chris just provided a report on the ad hoc effort, and Autumn chimed in with some additional thoughts. I know you didn't hear all of that, or I suspect you didn't. Is there anything you'd like to share, knowing that you don't know what was said already?
just my apology for being late, but I'm glad to join now. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions from others? Okay. Thank you. Are there any other board member reports? Mr. Ferris, do you have any you'd like to talk about the visit that happened today?
I think happy to mention a few things, but I think Autumn might care, or Jose might also care to chime in with that. We're fortunate to have Congressman Mike Thompson in Davis today for a variety of tours, sort of checking in on a variety of projects that are underway or soon to be underway throughout the community, including issues around Sutter Davis Hospital expansion, the expansion of the city's homeless shelter, but as well as some potential transportation projects, both at the Davis train station in conjunction with the Capitol Corridor Joint Powers Authority, as well as the Interstate 80 sort of managed lanes project. So we had the opportunity to show Congressman Thompson the Causeway Connection bus as well. So thank you so much to YCTV staff for your participation and as well as Caltrans participation today in those activities. Really greatly appreciate being able to show Congressman Thompson some of the key infrastructure projects that are happening in Yolo County. Thank you.
So we were able to have, Jose was able to have one of the Causeway Connect buses available to just kind of take a look at. And Autumn and the team put together a really nice two-page piece on the I-80 managed lane project. On the bottom, I don't know if you've made that available to all the directors or not, but that would be a good thing to do. So
I'll do
that. And Alex, you can please share with Amarjeet and the rest of the Caltrans team our appreciation for their attendance and for their support for that visit today.
I definitely will.
Thank you. Any other reports from board members? Yes, Tom.
I just want to mention that Kristen, our planner, and Spencer Bowen, our communications person at Woodland, reported on the point-to-point transit project for Woodland and the parts of the district ultimately. And I can only say that our council is very excited about the progress on this. I thanked Kristen. I thank her again.
Great. Very good. Good to hear that. Okay, I think unless I hear anything else, we'll move on to item 6, update on the TransDev driver shortage.
Good evening, Chair Saylor, Director of the Board. Seeing that we've gotten through past the holidays and complete turnaround, I'd say the biggest part is just retention. Complete since November 8th. We have not lost anyone leaving for another job or anything like that. It's only been for leave of absence, workman's comp, and we had one retiree. Otherwise, everyone has stayed, especially since after the holidays, the applications are coming in, so we're going through, and we have more issues with whether they qualify or not. But right now, we have 7 graduating in the next 2 weeks. We have 3 graduating in the next 4 weeks and another 3 in 6 weeks out, with more classes starting every Monday here on out. So it's looking really good. We keep our retention the way it is and the other direction we're going, and we're getting a better graduation rate going now. We'll be right on track.
Well, that's great news. Autumn, do you have anything to add?
I'll just say, one of the items we'll be talking about later is starting to look at restoring some service and planning ahead to bringing back the Route 42 expansion that we had postponed last fall, and that is in part due to the good news and the hard work of the TransDev team. So just really grateful and excited to see all the progress and all the people out doing their training in the bus yard, which I love to see.
Oh, wow. Any questions, colleagues?
Are they playing bumper bus?
Probably not.
Where you're looking at yard, there's buses.
Okay, this is not an action. This is an update. And no further questions from the board. We'll move to item 7, the YCTD microtransit, our request for proposal. Is Kristen going to do that, or Autumn going to introduce it? Or?
I think I can just jump in unless Autumn wants to introduce it. Okay. Good evening, Chair Saylor and members of the board. Tonight, for your approval, I'm presenting a request for proposals for a microtransit technology platform. This new technology platform will make it possible for YCTD to expand our microtransit services to the City of Woodland, and it will also enhance the technology tools that are used in the existing Knights Landing and Winters microtransit services. As you know, the RFP before you tonight is the culmination of all of the microtransit research that staff's been conducting along with the City of Woodland staff for the past several months, including talking with peer agencies about their microtransit experiences, talking with prospective vendors about the latest technologies available on the market, and talking to stakeholders in the board about our own local goals and priorities for microtransit. Next slide, please. The scope of work for the RFP includes some required tasks and some optional tasks that bidders may provide pricing for and we may choose to exercise at our discretion during the term of the contract. So, of course, a required task is to just provide the microtransit technology platform that we can use to reserve, route, dispatch, and customers can pay for the microtransit trips that can be used in all of our service areas. We also would like a service and deployment plan for each zone. So that's just basically knowing what hours it's going to operate in each zone, what the fares are going to be, what days of week, the rollout plan for each zone. And then we also want technical support for the platform. In terms of optional tasks, we would like some more robust technical planning assistance to help us plan for the Woodland microtransit service in particular. As you know, we already have Winters and Knights Landing going, so we have a place to start from. But we really could, if the vendors are able to, use some additional, more robust assistance planning, like how many vehicles we need for Woodland, what the times should really be, what the fares should be. And some vendors actually have used their own platform to run simulations, and they can tell you in a more fine-tuned way, how many vehicles you'll need and that sort of thing. We also would like to have the data, the microtransit data, represented in open data standards. This would allow us to have the service be discoverable in third-party trip planning apps. So say if a rider was putting in their origin and destination into Google Maps or an app like the Transit app, they could see both Yola Bus services, Capital Corridor, and if they were in the Woodland microtransit zone, that service would pop up as something they could potentially book. So that, again, is an optional task, but some vendors do have the capability of doing that. Next slide, please. The RFP in general was designed to attract as many qualified bidders as possible. What we heard from vendors during the RFI phase, the request for information, is that rather than being really prescriptive, in your RFP and trying to include like an exhaustive list of technical specifications, they suggested that instead we just really broadly talk about our goals and then have the technology companies tell us how their technology can help us achieve those goals. So we're very well positioned for that, being that you approved district-wide microtransit goals at your last meeting, and those were used really to just shape this RFP, to shape the questions in the RFP, and as we rate proposals and score them, we will be looking at how well they can help us meet those goals. We also place a lot of emphasis in the RFP on vendors having a strong track record of success. We ask for performance metrics from some of their existing clients so that we can determine whether their technology tools can be delivered to used to deliver productive and cost-effective services. If you approve the RFP tonight, we will move quickly to release the RFP, and we will ask for proposals to be submitted within about a month's time. We will then form an evaluation committee to review and score the applications. The evaluation committee will include representatives from the City of Woodland and potentially other local or regional partner agencies. And then we will conduct interviews and negotiations as needed, and we anticipate bringing you a contract for approval in late spring. With that, it concludes my presentation. And we will ask the board to consider approving RFP number 2201 for a microtransit technology platform.
Thank you very much, Kristen. First, we'll ask members of the board if you have any clarifying questions. Then we'll see if there are any public comments. Then we'll go to motion and discussion. Are there any clarifying questions from any member of the board?
I have one.
Yes, Jesse, please.
Yeah, when cities apply for affordable housing dollars, they're often scored on public transportation availability And I don't know if there's anywhere in the RFP where there's a box to check on this, but it would be great if service and deployment could score positively for housing evaluation in our cities that have microtransit only. And Winters and Knights Landing might be the only two, but it would really matter for Winters. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Lauren. That's a very interesting topic and a challenging one. Are there any other questions from members of the board? I don't see any hands, so we'll go to public comment. Are there any public comments on this recommended action? Again, I don't see any hands raised in the features that we have in Zoom. Are there any written communications that we've received? I don't hear any. So we're ready for, I think we're probably ready for a motion.
Lauren will move the item and also thank Kristen for her great presentation. Thank you.
Director Frericks.
I just was curious if there is a response from staff with regard to Director Lauren's question.
Autumn, go ahead.
Cattail.
No, you go ahead, Kristen.
Well, I was
just going to say that. Kristen nodded up and down and took her notes. I thought that was a good answer.
The squares are very small, so.
Can we go back to the fuller, bigger squares?
Yeah, can we stop sharing for a sec?
Right.
Gallery view.
So I would just say that I apologize for not getting back to your staff previously, Director Lauren, but really microtransit service should be considered mass transportation. I know that it might be like not totally clear to whoever is filling out that application or reviewing that application that microtransit is mass transportation, but it should fulfill that criteria. So I'd be happy to help Winter staff or the staff at the agency that's reviewing it better understand that.
And I was just going to chime in and say that I think that one thing we could do is in the future, we could provide a letter of support essentially saying that, that we could attach with the applications. There's also, there's the HCD, the department, which at the state is increasingly it controls a lot of the housing funding programs. This may be something where there needs to be kind of a systematic conversation with them with regard to what microtransit means. And that may be something that we can push through some of our legislative affiliations like California ACT or California Transit Association.
Well, thank you very much. I wanted to thank Director Frericks also for the follow-up on asking for an answer. But I think the city manager for Winters would just love a letter. And I think that would suffice. So thank you very, very much for your very professional answers.
Thank you, Lucas and Jesse, for focusing that topic. So Jesse has made a motion to approve, I believe. Is there a second?
Stallard will second.
And Stallard seconds. Any further discussion before we call the roll? I don't see any, so let's call the vote on the motion by Lauren and second by Stallard.
City of Davis?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Woodland?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
And Yolo County?
Aye. Fantastic. That's a big milestone. A lot of work has gone into it, so congratulations, everyone. Next topic is item 8, a tool for evaluating options to restore transit service. And Jose Perez, are you ready?
Yes, once I find that unmute button. Thank you, Chair Saylor and members of the board. So in brief, this item presented to you tonight is the culmination of a number of discussions and feedback that we've received from the board, wherein staff is recommending that the board of directors consider and approve a tool for evaluating transit service options to aid staff in prioritizing future service changes. So it is an evaluative tool, again, based primarily on not just staff recommendations, but feedback received from the board and from our citizens advisory committee meetings, from public stakeholders, et cetera, really as a tool to help us prioritize our limited resources when they are limited and to evaluate future service changes, including expansions and, if necessary, although we hope not to, further reductions or suspensions. The tool is service to identify criteria that are important for our planning service changes. And it extends the evaluations to beyond operating data. So as I'm sure the board recalls in September when we had to go through some, unfortunately, very quick turnaround service changes and suspensions, we didn't have a lot of time to base those recommendations on much beyond operating data or hard quantitative information. And we fully recognize and realize that as staff, our job is to make sure that we ensure the board's vision. And so through that conversation and the follow-ups to that, we developed this tool to, again, try and identify some of the key metrics that may not have quantitative data behind them, or at least not directly. We wanted to take into account, ensure that we consider the board's vision, adopted vision, values, and priorities as part of any proposed service recommendation or development of recommendations. And this item tonight, we are asking the board to review what staff has developed and then to as an opportunity as well to adjust the potential weighting of any of the criteria therein. Again, for the goals of ensuring that the board and district goals regarding services are met and that it extends beyond just those that are being considered or presented by staff. We want to make sure that our board feels that they their priorities are reflected in any future service change being developed or recommended to the board for their consideration. And so as part of this staff report, we also presented so brief summaries of some of the potential service alternatives that we are developing and going to be considering for the board's consideration. what I mean by that is, in a nutshell, we do not want to make service recommendations based solely on numbers and data that staff has on hand, but we want to make sure that it is reflective of some of the important factors, social equity, justice, environmental concerns here that are to reflect our board's goals and missions. And with that, I'd be very happy to clarify anything within the staff report or my presentation and to provide any additional background on how the tool was developed.
Jose, do you also want to say a bit about what we see as kind of some of the anticipated potential service changes coming up over the next 6 months?
Yeah, I'd be very happy to elaborate on those. But very briefly, some of the potential changes that we are considering include the long-anticipated expansion of the Route 42, one of our YOLO GO service recommendations, restoring express service to downtown Sacramento from some of our communities, from Woodland and from Davis, focusing on those most prior to the suspension, most used timeframes for AM and afternoon services. Potentially increasing or returning again the suspended service ban or the fringe hour services that were reduced or suspended due to COVID impacts, and so possibly starting a little earlier or ending a little later depending on the route, as well as some and we also are going to be considering the some modifications to what we are currently operating in terms of local assistance to the city of Davis. So we are in coordination and communications with the university as well as staff at Unitrans. And we want to make sure that any adjustments, i.e. reductions in the level of service that we provide from YOLO Bus will not overly impact or negatively impact the needs of the community. But we are considering reducing our service there and Unitrans picking up taking back the L line and with YCTD focusing on providing service along the A line through the end of the spring academic quarter, early June 22.
Very good. Thank you. We have a question from Mr. Stallard, and this is a time for board members to ask clarifying questions before we go to public comment. So, Tom, go ahead.
Yes. You know, we've had to all pivot a lot over the several months of 2021, and it seemed to me it wasn't the recommendation at one time that we were going to be eliminating express service in favor of more frequent using the funds for more frequent service of the other buses. So and now you're talking about putting those express buses back on. Is that strictly a response to consumer demand? Help me understand what our current thinking is, please.
Yeah, ultimately our current thinking is meeting the mobility needs of the communities. We have had some requests from the community to consider reintroduction of suspended services. mainly the express services, which we suspended in September. We've had some recent customer requests for consideration of additional service along Route 42 because some of those trips are becoming a little bit more crowded, and there are still some customers with health concerns and a little bit of what I will say is anxiety towards capacity constraints on those trips. And so we are identifying ways to be as efficient and effective as possible with our limited resources to meet those requests and that service demand. It is not intended to simply bring back exactly as it was before what we had suspended, but an opportunity for us to identify the current mobility demands or the express commute times or periods when there's the most demand and see what options we have available to present to the board for consideration.
On a long-term basis, though, are we essentially going to be increasing the frequency of 42s all across the board so that we don't necessarily need independent express buses? Is that a potential long-term scenario?
I think if I can jump in, Director Stollard, I think that, you know, there's two categories of suspended commuter services or express services. There are some that we suspended very early in the pandemic because ridership was quite low. But the ones that we suspended last September were ones that actually had fairly strong ridership. And, you know, we had a lot of very unhappy people come to that board meeting, as I'm sure you recall, who were like, don't take away my express bus. Because it is, you know, even with the increased frequencies on the Route 42, it's still not going to be as fast as a direct trip, right? And so I think that, I think it was never our intention to permanently eliminate some of those services that do have the strong demand. And it was our hope to bring those back. And we've definitely continued to hear from, you know, those express bus riders expressing that interest and like, when is that service going to be restored? So I would say that going forward, I think we want to take a comprehensive look at where express services continue to make sense and where they don't. I mean, the world has changed and commute patterns have changed very much, you know, with the pandemic. And so I personally think we have a lot more people going westbound across the causeway in the morning than we used to, relative to the number of people going eastbound. And so there's just some interesting kind of big changes that I think we want to look at. And in fact, as part of our TRSIP application that we're putting forward with Caltrans, one of the things we've included in there is a study of the regional express bus services across the causeway that will allow us to invest in some good data and really do an analysis of what our contemporary commute patterns look like across the causeway, and then be able to reevaluate what our service offerings as far as express buses across the causeway need to look like.
Thank you. I'm actually asking questions on behalf of my city staff, so I appreciate helping us understand. And I realize every month is almost a new ball game in this business, so who knows what's yet to come, but thank you for the explanation.
Good. Any further questions from other members of the board? We do have a public comment that has been submitted in writing. I think that was sent to all members of the board.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mike Birnbaum.
Everyone's had a chance to read Mr. Birnbaum's comment. Would staff like to just give a brief response, or not a response, but a brief summary of that message so that it's in the record here?
I would be happy to, Chair Saylor, and I do want to mention to the board and those participating tonight that I did have an opportunity to speak with Mr. Birnbaum earlier this afternoon and go over some of his questions. But in brief, the public comment that we received and that was forwarded to the board had some questions regarding potential timing of when some of these service changes may happen, as well as some suggestions and recommendations to try and, as staff is considering it, bring some of these service changes, not necessarily all together or all or nothing, but more in an a la carte kind of service mode. Mr. Birnbaum, who submitted the comment, stressed that the public is hungry for the district and for TransDev to make some changes and to present to them some additional options. And I should say that I very clearly said that I am also as well looking forward to bringing some additional services to our community and some additional options. But I did clarify with Mr. Birnbaum that, you know, any of the potential service changes that we bring to the board for their consideration would be available for the public to also comment on as a public item, and we'd be very clear about our intended timeframes for bringing those changes around. And I also reminded him that we are being fairly conservative and cautious. We do not want to have a repeat of what occurred last fall, where we were aiming to launch a service and then had to kind of scramble at the last minute and rein it in. So we want to make sure that we have good, reliable availability of all the resources necessary to provide those services. And so I believe after our conversation this afternoon, Mr. Brombaum was very satisfied with the response, but he does appreciate the opportunity to present his comments to the board and makes himself available if there are any questions to him directly.
Thank you, Jose. I appreciate it. Any comments from board members now? We're being asked to approve this, approve the tool for evaluating options to restore transit service as shared with us now, with the idea of these are the likely changes that we can anticipate. Chris?
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks staff, Jose, for putting this together. My question is, it seems like the right tool, all the right things are hit. I'm just wondering, have you tested it in terms of applying maybe a service change or anything else? Did I miss that? Or maybe you looked at something and how it may have scored?
We did test it. We tested it with beginning first with the potential expansion of the Route 42, one of the YOLOGO service recommendations and where it scored, as well as returning some of the express routes. And we didn't want to, prior to the board's consideration and approval of the tool, kind of bias or influence it. But we did practice it. And that can give you kind of a sense of how those recommendations stacked up. But we did want to make sure that, we have an opportunity at this, now to adjust the weighting of some of how some of the criteria are scored, some of the fine tuning of the elements, but we didn't want to influence too directly prior to actually presenting a full service recommendation for the board's consideration.
Mm-hmm. And then on the question around the regional impacts, specifically the one on climate goals, regional goals, I mean, are there specific goals that you are measuring those against, or is it more so I'm just trying to think the impact of any specific goal that maybe we have in the region. And I have something specific in mind in terms of areas of high density where we're trying to push towards transit-oriented development, that maybe there may be a change coming from taking away or reducing a route in an area that is slated to be high density, how that might score there. It's not necessarily a goal. It would show that way. I'm just trying to think of how that might play out or what you're measuring against to show that.
So very generally, what we're looking to, if there aren't adopted regional or specific goals within where that service change would be most impactful, we would say it needs to make sure that it actually goes with our board's goals of reducing, climate impact or VMTs, VSA, or greenhouse gas reductions, et cetera. We don't have any specific goals unless they're already there. However, if there's a service change, say, in the city of West Sacramento, where the proposed change could impact one direction or the other, a specific disadvantaged area or community, we would identify within the, the instance of that specific service change, what goals and climate plans are applicable and evaluate from there. So I guess that's kind of a way of saying we can do both. This tool is not intended to be the complete evaluation or item used to develop service recommendations. It's really more to help us prioritize how we present the packages to the board for their consideration.
Yeah, and I think it might be consulting with the hometown agency about what specifically that means. I have a service change we did a few years ago, which was in the Washington neighborhood. We reduced a route in that ran up 3rd Street, up to 3rd and C around CalSTRS at the time. And while it made sense because there was a reduction in, it wasn't being ridden much, it might not have resulted in a score. The score might have been different because we had so much housing coming into that area. So it might have been just made it a little different. So unless you kind of understand that, that's what I'm saying, maybe a consultation with the local, the city agency to kind of understand what are the impacts might be the prompt here to get the answer. So just some feedback. But I like the tool. If it's prompting the right questions that we can get the most information, that would be great. So
thank you, Chris. Are there other comments? I'll make a comment. I think this is a very solid piece for rational consideration and deliberate decision making. Any tool like this will always need to be augmented by good judgment. And so I think this isn't an automatic, this doesn't make the decision for us, it helps make the decision. And so I see it as a valuable step so that we can all have conversation around this, talking about the same topics on the same page for future decision making. But it shouldn't be, I wouldn't see it as us being slaves to this tool for a forced decision, but rather this informs the shared decisions on how we need to proceed. So is that reasonable? Am I getting that right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and I would just add, in terms of next steps, our plan then is actually to bring back to you in March the kind of the results of some evaluation of some of these scenarios that you see here, with then some recommendations for kind of phased implementation of some of these changes as additional driver resources become available. And as Jose alluded to, some of that has to do with Unitrans and their own driver shortage improving, and when we think, you know, we're able to take back some of those resources, really kind of phased with the first at spring quarter being able to take back some of our drivers, and then of course at in summer vacation being able to take back hopefully 100% of our drivers. So
great. And Mr. Ferrix, I see you have a comment or a motion.
Just a quick question first. I mean, certainly, yeah, certainly supportive of the item, but just a quick question for staff with regard to, you know, as part of this discussion this evening, you know, there are a variety of, and it's been outlined in the staff report as well, but a variety of current service changes, you know, being evaluated, right? You know, and Director Sallard raised some of these earlier, right? This sort of issue of, you know, increased frequency of, you know, Route 42 or, you know, restoring express bus service, things of that nature. But and there's a few others as well. But I'm curious, are there hypothetically other service changes that are potentially likely to be evaluated? I mean, or, you know, it depends on how long we use this tool for, but I mean, I think it seems like it could also, it's good for the purpose of sort of, I would say, you know, sort of near future, but it also seems like it could be, especially once it's had some, once we've tested it out, you know, could be pretty valuable tool sort of potentially ongoing in terms of, for, you know, future evaluation of service and potential changes that may, you know, need to occur that aren't currently part of our sort of suite of offered services, we'll say. Curious about that.
So we have, if I may, Director Ferrix, we have had some conversations about that, and it is fully, at this point, staff's intent to keep this as a living tool. So utilize it now as approved, ideally by the board, for the ones that we're currently considering to get us back to where we, whatever our new normal may or may not be. But yeah, absolutely use it moving forward for any future development, any other proposed service recommendations, because if nothing else, this is a snapshot of the board's direction and priorities, and we want to use that for any future recommended or future developed service changes to either expand or, you know, reduce any services moving forward. And I do intend it, you know, at this point for it to again be living, because as our priorities change, as our goals as a district change and update, so should this tool. Either by changing the way certain metrics are weighed and considered, or adding and removing them as appropriate.
And I would just give one specific example, which is, you know, as part of the Woodland Microtransit We are looking at changes or reductions in service in Woodland as part of that process, you know, replacing some of those services with microtransit. And so I think that as we think about that, are we getting rid of all of our Woodland services? Are we only getting rid of some? Are we getting rid of the ones we have and adding new ones? I mean, that's just a great use case, I think, that is kind of, I think, in our not immediate, but medium-term future that I think where this tool could be useful.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Moved by Frerichs.
Seconded by Ledesma.
Wonderful. So we have a motion by Director Frerichs and a second by Director Ledesma to approve this framework for evaluating service changes. Please call the roll.
City of Davis?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Woodland?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
Yolo County?
Aye.
The motion passed.
Thank you, Mimi. And that brings us to item 9. And Autumn, we have a guest with us this evening, Leo Levinson. Are you going to introduce this?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and start, and then I'll introduce Leo. So this is for Leo's first, I believe, meeting before the board. And so I want to introduce him and talk about some of the great work he's doing. So Leo Levinson is a consultant with Regional Government Services. As you know, in December, the board approved a contract with RGS to help steward YCTD through this period of transition after the departure of our Deputy Director of Finance, Janice Bryan, as we seek to kind of stabilize and then staff back up internally. I just want to say Leo has been an incredibly valuable resource. He was most recently the CFO for the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency, SF Muni, and so just brings a wealth of experience in this area, and he's been just a powerhouse in terms of the amount of work he's been getting done over the last month, and we've all come to really rely on him to help us through our audit, to help us through figuring out where we are with our mid-year budget status, which you're going to hear about next. But this piece that I'm really excited to hear about is an assessment of our financial systems. He's really done a kind of a soup-to-nuts evaluation of everything from how are we handling cash, how are we using our credit cards, what does our accounting system look like. It's been just wonderful to kind of tag along with his thought process. And a number of the recommendations that you'll see before you as part of this memo were part of the consent calendar in terms of some of the low-hanging fruit modifications and changes that we saw needed to happen. But there's also some kind of longer-term changes here that are bigger. And I wanted to, well, we're not looking for your action tonight on this. We wanted to update you on and sort of where we see some of the needs going forward. So with that, I will turn it over to Leo.
Thank you very much, Autumn. And really, I want to say what a pleasure it's been to be here working with Yolo County Transportation District, just in terms of the three takeaways so far. And the first, you can go to the next slide. The first really is I see a dedicated staff in place, very capable, very public spirit oriented, and a strong current financial position, as we'll see in the budget to actual. And I did see from the analysis that Autumn's talked about that YCTD could certainly benefit from upgrading the financial and payroll systems. They've been in place for a very long time, and it's quite natural. There are features of modern systems that could really be a benefit to the district, and I can talk just a little bit more about that. And then, as Autumn mentioned, also very common in most agencies, financial policies and procedures have been in place for a long time. There were a number of them that really needed updating, either just to reflect the way things are being done or to make sure that they're following best practices in terms of separation of duties and that kind of thing. So next slide. And so just, again, a really brief overview, and then I'm happy to take any questions. With the accounting system, the current accounting system has been in place for a really long time. It's really inexpensive. It's the Sage 50. Some of you may know it as Peachtree. And so I think it's been certainly over a decade, and I'm not sure how much longer than that. Very inexpensive, but very limited in its capabilities, at least the version that the district has. And so a new financial system would allow better tracking of projects and grants. It would allow for documents to be stored together with the financial transactions, which would make it much easier to answer questions when you're going back in time. Better remote access. You could really strengthen the backup and recovery resilience. All of those things are available, and not for that much more than the district is currently paying that we've looked at. And so, and I believe that if there's a decision made to move forward, it could be implemented in time for the next fiscal year and sort of run out this fiscal year in the existing system and start fresh with a new system in your next fiscal year if you choose to do that. For payroll, the the district is currently using a system procured by the county, Payality. There have been a few problems around the communication between the county and the district. It turns out there's no requirement that the district use that Payality system. And with a new accounting system, it should be possible to implement a payroll system that can integrate seamlessly into the accounting system. That'll be a real advantage. And to have time entry, modern time entry, because right now there's timesheets and wet signatures being applied and that kind of thing. So it should be able to really ease that routine administrative processes. And as I say, from what I've looked at, there are a couple of options with a really minor difference in cost from the current system. So I think that's a really, as Autumn said, a low-hanging fruit to really improve life on some of the administrative side of things in the district. Next slide. And then for the financial policies, as Autumn said, there's a few that came before you today. The first was a cash management policy to ensure best practices with regular account reconciliation and separation of duties. Again, with your dedicated staff, there's no indication of anything amiss currently, but it was clear that the sort of written policies hadn't been updated in a while and weren't necessarily being followed exactly. And so this was a chance to refresh them, make them match what's being done, or in some cases just improve it to have better separation of duties. Similarly, with the purchasing card, there's opportunities to tighten controls, avoid the chance of problems in the future. Again, no evidence of serious problems in the past, but this is just to try and prevent those kinds of problems by having strong policies and expense reimbursement policies that are clear. And then a very specific recommendation, they're currently using American Express. It isn't carried by a lot of places. There's a free to the district visa program managed by the state. That looks like a good option that other special districts use. And for a common use of the credit cards is for fuel for the vehicles. That can be easily handled with fuel cards that are checked out with the vehicles. And finally, another one that you see every district and local government has trouble maintaining its records management policy. So we've got a fresh one in front of you today, or that was approved by you today, actually, the consent calendar, to allow management of files more consistently. It emphasizes when paper can be removed. If you want to move towards paperless, this allows for it. And it's also a reminder and to make sure it's specifically stated about confidentiality and secure. If you have to collect any confidential information, it says explicitly how it has to be kept secure. So that's another advantage of the new records management policy. And so finally, the next slide. So there's two additional policies that we expect to be bringing to you next month. One is a general reserve policy, because it appears there hasn't been an explicit one in place. And so this is to allow the board to think about the right balance of preserving some of your fund balance for future downturns and special needs. And so this will be a chance for you to see and weigh in on the balance between spending now and saving for rainy days. And then secondly, the procurement policy, I think has been intended to be updated for quite some time, but the one formally in place still dates back to the 2000s. I think it's 2002, so it's 20 years later, and there's a few things that I think need to be updated. So we hope to bring that before you in March. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you, Mr. Levinson. I appreciate your help, and I think it's a very good report and good status moving forward. Are there questions, colleagues? Okay. Yes,
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say I think 2 months of a cushion is pretty light in these very mercurial times. So I think we need to think about a little bit more concerned about having some money in the bank, which we're in good shape right now, and I'm glad for that. But the times are very, very mercurial.
I think that's is mercurial another one of those Greek letters, like delta and omicron and those other, you know.
Well, it's like the thermometer. It goes up, it goes down, it goes up, it goes down. Sometimes it goes up a whole lot, and sometimes it goes down a whole lot.
Very good. So we'll have opportunity to have that conversation, it sounds like, in the coming weeks.
The only reason I verbalize that now is I just want to advise staff that I'm feeling like that's a skinny cushion. Thank you.
Okay. Are there other questions or comments on the presentation? Jesse, please.
I just have a comment. First, I'm very grateful to Leo Levinson for his hard work, but moreover, really grateful that our executive director, Autumn Bernstein, has taken this on and is moving us forward in so many different levels. I mean, we're very aware that we needed updating, and this is really expansive and global in the updating, and I just really appreciate it. So I want to say thank you.
Thanks, Jesse. Agreed.
Thanks.
And then I think, Chris, I think you might be next, and then Lucas. No, your hand is up, or?
Lucas, Drew first.
Oh, okay. Lucas, go ahead.
It miraculously goes away on its own, too. I don't even touch that button. Someone else does that for me, or at least has been happening. A couple things, Mr. Chair. Appreciate, first of all, yes, as well, this has already been expressed, the work of our consulting team on this, and really appreciate similarly Director, or, you know, Bernstein's, like, sort of leadership on this, just to sort of take on these issues. I mean, I think anytime, you know, we've heard this as a common refrain, for, you know, this policy is, you know, 10 years old. This policy is 20 years old. This policy, maybe even longer. So
policy doesn't exist.
Well, okay. I wasn't going to go there, but I do think that, you know, the sort of regular and routine sort of look at these items and updating is very important. I do have one quick question for Mr. Levinson, which is just, you said, you know, the item, I forget the name of the original, the program that we are using for payroll now, but this sort of colloquial peach tree, I think is the sort of informal, or more informal name for it. But, you know, so if that one is cheap, well, what about a stone writing tablet? I mean, can we not, you know, go back and save even more money by using stone? Oh, wait, never mind. Sorry, I'll leave it there. No, but thank you very much for your work on this. Really appreciate it. And I'm glad that we're getting some of these very common sense item policies in place. Thank you.
Very good. Chris, your turn now.
Thank you. Sure, and thank you very much for the report. And it is long overdue, outlining some issues that I think all of us at some time or another in the last 8 years have kind of brought to light. The reserve policy has been one of them. I think we talked about off and on for a couple of years, and defining what exactly reserve is, I think, was part of the issue. But I do have a question on the payroll, time entry and payroll system recommendations, because I'm trying to understand the short-term recommendation. I understand trying to build accountability to inputting things directly. In the medium run, recommending to have YCD bring its own payroll processing in-house. And I'm not countering it. But it is something for your thoughts on an agency that is relatively small, building in the expertise and not leveraging, which is leveraging existing resources or expertise that resides elsewhere. I mean, I'm just trying to get the thought process around why one do that. I mean, I think part of the issue, I think, from an organizational standpoint is redundancy, you know, the controls that are in place, having one person, you know, doing it here, you know, it certainly would bring accountability. I'm just trying to get to the kind of the expertise that you might gain and that you might gain from leveraging another organization.
Sure. I mean, you raise a really good point. For a small organization, you definitely do not want to have a single point of potential failure in having only one person able to run the system. So it would only, I would only recommend it if at least two and perhaps even three people have the capability of running a payroll, so that even if two are out. The other thing is that the I'm not necessarily recommending running your own or doing your RFPs for benefit programs, that YCTV could still piggyback off of existing the health programs of CalPERS and the other benefit programs. But running the actual payroll, the key issues are to make sure you're nimble when there's new employees or changes in a salary, that those get in quickly. And the payroll errors come from a delay between a change in someone's status and actually getting it into the system. And so part of the problems in having it be separated between the having the county be involved in the middle of that is that I think the county's, the experience apparently from staff has been that the special districts aren't necessarily the county's highest priority in terms of making sure that the data is up to date. And so it, that's why I talk about accountability, that there's a very strong incentive to be up to date on payroll the closer you are to the staff being paid. And in terms of expertise, I think the modern systems are not that complicated in terms of they really lead you by the hand in terms of entering issues such as salary and deductions and withholdings and that kind of thing, so that the expertise is really not, and they also tend to have better customer service representatives on hand to walk you through if you have a problem directly with the payroll company, so that if you have a contract with one of these, they will walk you through a problem. And there are even the possibility of having do things like file your taxes, certainly produce your W-2s for you. So a lot of expertise can reside in the service that you contract with.
I think
I'd like to. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Well, I wanted to chime in with a couple of things. A, like there's a lot of complicated stuff around in terms of the challenges with regard to payroll. And we've talked about some of those like in December during our closed session, right? So there's a lot of different layers of some of the problems that we have with payroll. Some of it is just the fact that literally we do timesheets by hand, you know, things need to be signed by hand. You know, it's just extremely outdated, and every step of the way things need to be manually entered into multiple systems. And so that creates a lot of opportunity for error. And so this aspect of it is a particular piece where both we just need modern systems that just eliminate error, because you eliminate all the opportunities for error that come in with repetitive manual entry. And there's so many places in our current system where there's manual entry transferring from one system to another. The other thing is that in terms of the work, YCTV staff actually do most of the actual entry currently. It's just that the county then sort of functions as the banker on the back end and does some of the entry into the CalPERS system. So that what happens is actually, it's not actually more efficient. In some ways, it's less efficient, because when we see disparities between what we've entered into Payality and then what's showing up on the CalPERS side, we don't have the ability to see where the errors have been made. And so then we end up having all of this back and forth between our accounting staff and the county's accounting staff. It just actually makes the whole process more cumbersome and inefficient. So I actually think that I'm pretty convinced about kind of just getting the county out of that role. They'll still be our banker, but that getting them out of that role will actually address some of, not all of, the problems that we have with payroll, but it is a piece of the puzzle.
And that really is helpful to get the full picture, because, you know, in sort of the way I'm thinking about it, it's just a one-way street where we try to narrow down the funnel to one stream of information going into whatever. But you made me remember there's another dance partner here that may be contributing to the problem. Thank you for that explanation. It makes a lot of sense.
Tom, may I make a comment before I call on you?
Yes, I do appreciate Chris's point. Am I correct in understanding the recommendation, Mr. Levinson, is that we take control of our payroll? That doesn't necessarily mean we do it ourselves. We could contract with paychecks or some service like that, but they would, we would be the client and they would service us directly and respond to us. Perhaps, you know, as a, treating us as a customer, which we are, rather than basically another task at the end of the desk. So I like that because I agree with you. Payroll entry is not a lot of fun. In my office, we have 9 employees, and once a week, we call in the hours, and we actually have a time-in-a-box recording system, which works quite well. So it minimizes intrusion in our work week, in our business week. So if that's the understanding, I think it's smart.
And my comment is no matter who's providing the service, it shouldn't be an afterthought or it doesn't get priority. YCTD pays for that service and should be getting the service no matter who the provider is. About 3 or 4 years ago, the Yolo Solano Air Quality Management District chose to change its bank and its approach to accounting and payroll. I know Hope is very familiar with that, and maybe as you're thinking about this, Autumn, talking with Matt Earhart and getting some insights from Hope on how that decision was made, why, and how it's working would be a helpful additional input. Maybe you already done that. So I think that I don't hear you announcing a decision. I hear you sharing a consideration that you're working on, and I look forward to your action that's in the best interest of this agency, addressing the concerns and considerations we've had over the years.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I will just add that, yes, we have had conversations with both the Air District and also the Resource Conservation District about how they've transitioned some of their systems out of the county in order to, create some more efficiency and clarity.
Yeah, that's good. So this is it's a maturation of the process and the organization. So I think this is not up for action. This is a briefing, and I think you've done your job. You've got us excited and interested, and we look forward to the next steps. Thank you, Mr. Levinson. Thanks, Autumn.
Okay.
That brings us to item 10, the mid-year budget status report.
And same team on this one. Leo has really done the heavy lifting on this, and so I'll let him dive right in.
Sure. I've just got a very brief. The tables are in the packet, and I just wanted to highlight a few things. First of all, as with any projection, this is just a projection at this time of year, and things could change based on events that happen between now and the end of June. But looking at where we are with the budget, you are within your budget at this point. And in fact, with savings compared to budget, as I mentioned, there's about 500,000 of labor savings that we project through to the end of the year. And that's allowing for the positions, the planned positions that may be filled between now and the end of the year. But it's just due to the level of vacancies and the time it's taken to fill the positions that have been authorized by the board. There's about 1 million of other costs, looks like won't be fully spent to budget, though that could change depending on the service changes. This is really at a steady state projection forward. So depending on how the timing is, if there's an expansion of service, that could contract somewhat. But there's clearly plenty of budget available to allow for some expansion if that's possible between now and the end of the year. The expenditures that you see in the report do reflect 6 engine rebuilds and replacements that have already taken place and been booked on the books. And the revenue is also trending a little bit better than budget due to outside use of the CNG refueling station. And I think there's probably a very conservative budget used for this year on passenger fares, and they appear to be coming in, again, as a projection through the end of the year, if it's steady state, coming in somewhat above budget. So all of that together adds up to about $1.8 million of savings compared to budget if current trends continue through the end of the year. And those budget savings, we're going to be tracking them, and I'm hoping to assisting the staff with the budget planning to make sure those are taken into account. And also with the reserve policy, they'll be discussing next month. And that's really my summary, and happy to answer any questions.
Well, thank you. So next month we'll be seeing some more detailed budget presentations. So this is, you're giving us a preview, sort of. Is that accurate?
I think next month we'll be talking about the reserve policy, and we can, but as part of that, taking into account what we think will be the amount available for next year's budget, that some of that could be used towards funding your reserve, should you choose.
Very good. Colleagues, any questions on this topic? I don't see any, so I think it's clear enough. You've done a good, concise job of giving us an overview. I think we're ready to move to item 11, the executive director's report. Now, you've been a busy person, haven't you?
Well, we've been a busy team.
Yes.
So, in addition to the items that are in there, I wanted to say a bit more about our TRCIP application. That is, you know, as we mentioned, working with Caltrans on that, and that is really very focused on really optimizing all of the transit components of the 80 managed lanes proposal. So it'll both help fill our budget shortfall that we have currently to get that project built, and also make sure that we're really emphasizing and focusing both our attention and Caltrans on how we really make sure we're optimizing transit. And the cool thing about TRCIP is it funds both capital and planning. So there's a capital component, but then we're looking at two really cool studies I mentioned, looking at kind of reassessing our regional express services that use the causeway, really looking at how demand has changed and how our service offerings could improve to capture more of the demand for people traveling across the causeway. Where are they coming from? Where are they going? How do we best serve them? And then the second planning study is bus on shoulder. And this is kind of a neat concept that even after we have the managed lane built, there may be times, particularly on the causeway, between Childs and an Enterprise, where we may see that if congestion is quite severe, giving the buses the opportunity to travel on the outside shoulder, rather than so that they don't have to go across the congested traffic lanes to get into the managed lane and then back out in that short stretch, there could be some substantial travel time savings. So it's something that Caltrans has done some preliminary analysis and looks promising, and so we want to explore that more fully. So that is the other kind of planning study that is a piece of this application. And I'll just note that we've been encouraged to apply for this by some of the staff at the State Transportation, California State Transportation Agency. There's never been a TRCIP application from Yolo County. So this would be our first, and we're hopeful that we can help make a dent and help us get our 80 managed lanes project built. And we are also supporting the Capital Corridor Drug Powers Authority TRCIP application, which, if funded, would include some money for YCTD to essentially put new equipment in our buses that would allow us, would allow people to pay using credit cards directly on our buses. So that's kind of a cool fare modernization feature that will happen if CCJPA's application gets supported. So anyway, I just wanted to say a bit more about those applications. And then in terms of other things, I wanted to just note a couple of other things that were not in the staff report. The first is that our new website is going to be launching. We have a tentative date of also March 3rd, but I just checked in with our new communications and marketing specialist today about this, and he has said before the next board meeting, there will be a new YCTD website. So that's my promise to you. I'm very excited. It looks beautiful. We've been, he's been very focused on getting that done. And so really looking forward to having a modern website. Again, going back to our 10 to 20 year old comments, it'll be great to have a 21st century website. And that's all I wanted to share there, but I wanted to invite Daisy to just give us a quick snapshot on where we are with our ridership.
Thank you, Autumn. So regarding our ridership for our fixed route, we did see a dip in the month of January. However, that was expected since the Unitrans assistance that we are operating right now, UC Davis suspended classes, so there weren't as many students on campus. So we saw that correlation between the low ridership and those students on campus, which, again, we did kind of expect to see a dip. However, we have been looking on a weekly basis since classes resumed on campus January 31st, I believe. We've been seeing about roughly around 3,000 students or riders for the UniTrans assistance on a weekly basis. So hopefully back in February, we should be able to see our numbers coming back up to possibly where they were in December. So that's our hope for the fixed route ridership. And then moving on to our paratransit and microtransit ridership. As the norm, it is consistent. However, I do want to point out that we have been seeing a huge, we've been seeing an increase in our nights landing and winters participation. So that should be good news moving forward with our Woodland microtransit project. So signs that people are using our microtransit. And that's all I have for you guys today.
Interesting. And Autumn, do you have anything? Thank you, Daisy. Very interesting insights. Autumn, anything further?
I just want to thank everyone for spending your Valentine's Day with us, and really appreciate the time and attention. And Jesse, I see someone must have sent you one of our Yolo Basu backgrounds. So, Hope, did you have something?
I just wanted to remind the chair to just take one more stab at public comment, if you wouldn't mind, before we close the meeting.
Why is that? Just
as a review, too, please.
Because we typically ask for it after the items and with the director's report as well. So I just was.
Oh, the director's item on the director's report, you're suggesting public comment on the director's report, even though no action. Okay, fair enough. Is there any public comment on the director's report? We have one member. Oh, that was Hope. Okay. Any members of the public want to comment on the director's report? This would include you, Tom, if you have a comment. Maybe not. Okay. I don't see any. Thanks, Hope, for that reminder.
Sorry, Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that.
Oh, that one I forget frequently because it's usually there's no action to be taken, and it seems like so. But yes, it's appropriate to do. Thank you. Autumn, I don't know, did you report on the DISC project?
I didn't. You know, I'm happy to say a bit about it. It was in the written report, but I'm happy to say a bit more about that if at the chair's discretion.
Maybe just a minute or so.
Sure. So YCDD did submit a letter to the Davis City Council prior to their early February board meeting. It was a February 1st board meeting, offering some comments about the project. And we have been in conversation with the project proponents for, you know, I'd say 4 or 5 months. We've met with them periodically. We expressed support for the location of the transit center as it's currently envisioned, as well as support for a grade separated bicycle and pedestrian crossing. We also talked, something we've been talking about for quite some time was encouraging the project proponents to join the YOLO Commute, our Transportation Management Association. And so they did take on that commitment as part of the council's action, part of the development agreement that was approved by the council. So we're very, very pleased about that. That would make them our first commercial development member of the TMA. We do have other members that are housing developments, like the Rail Yards project in West Sacramento, but they would be our first commercial developer. And so that if the project will now go before the voters in June, and if the voters do approve it, then that they would, as commercial development comes online, the commercial tenants would be required, and the residential would be required, to participate in the TMA, which is really great news. And hopefully we hope it's a precedent going forward for other commercial developments in Yolo County.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Well, I think that we've concluded the business of the board for today. Unless someone raises their hand and creates a flurry of chaos, we'll move on. And we'll adjourn this meeting, and our next meeting is scheduled for March 14th at 7 p.m. I could tell you how pleased we all are on the progress this agency is making and the good work that's being done. It's a team effort, as Autumn said, and I'm so delighted that we're all part of this team.
Here,
see
here.
You on March. See you on March 14th, or March, whenever it is.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good night.